We've got one board member missing, so I'll wait the 2 minutes and see if he shows up before we start.
He's downstairs.
He's downstairs? Thanks.
Calvin, is that over with?
Yep.
Calvin is coming down the hall.
Stacy, if we get 10 more public, can we move this meeting downstairs real quick?
No, we can't.
We can't.
We will be super tight. And some of the presenters can move to the table. Let me change that. All of the presenters can move to the table.
Right there in the middle?
That's you, Calvin.
Are we grilling you or are you grilling us?
I don't know. Stacy told me I had to sit here. That's all I know.
All right.
I'm not going to question it.
Just do what you're told.
That's right.
Smart man.
Okay, this is Ernie Perkins at in Salt Lake. We're here for a board meeting, a wildlife board meeting, which will be conducted both over the air, televideo, and we have three members present in Salt Lake. That's Bill Fenimore representing the northern region, Calvin Crandall representing the southern region, pardon me, the central region, and I'll do a roll call vote on the remainder that are coming from outside. So Jake Albrecht.
Here.
Jake Albrecht is present and coming in over the telephone. And our director, Jim Karpowitz, is also present in Salt Lake City. And he is our executive secretary. John Baer?
Yes, sir.
Yep, John Baer calling in from the telephone and representing the central region. And Del Brady?
I'm here, Ernie.
Very good. Coming in televideo from the Northeast Region office. And finally, Mike King.
Here, and price, as always, is nice.
Outstanding. I think you're supposed to get a dump of rain today, aren't you?
I hope.
Maybe. Got some last night.
Good deal. So with that, let's start the meeting with the approval of the agenda. I'll note that we're correcting that printed agenda to show that I'm serving as acting chair for this meeting due to the mechanics of switching the audio-visual around. So, and could I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Moved by Bill Fenimore.
I'll second that.
Seconded by Calvin Crandall. All those in favor?
Aye.
And
I'm in favor.
In favor.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that's seven responses,
yes.
Or six responses. It's unanimous. And we'll do a roll call vote on the actual action items that we get to a little bit later. I'll call for each region so that Stacy and Lou Ann can properly record who's voting what. So with that, we have an update from Director Karpowitz.
Okay, before I get started, let me just tell everybody I appreciate it getting together so quickly for this electronic meeting. As you all know, we're experiencing some really unusual conditions this year with drought and now with flooding in some parts of the state, but with fire, and we've had to react quite quickly to conditions that are constantly changing around the state this year. So, as you remember at our last board meeting, we talked about some additional early season and general season antlerless permits. Today we're going to talk about some late season antlerless permits, and we're hopeful with what we do today that should be all we need for the remainder of this year. Drought conditions have improved in the southern part of the state, but are still pretty tough in the central and northern part, and so we need to take some action. Fires have also impacted our areas pretty extensively. As far as the bison tags go, we were ready to handle this at the last board meeting, but The agenda item only said antlerless elk, so we couldn't deal with it then. And so we have a recommendation for the board to do this now. I just want to mention in regard to both these additional late season antlerless elk and the increased bison permits, they could be done by a director decision, but we have always asked the board to weigh in on these and to approve them in the past, and so we want to continue with that practice. There may still be a need for some emergency action by the director, but hopefully we've covered all of it now. And I appreciate the public here to talk about cougars and to have some more dialogue, and appreciate you indulging us in this small room today. It's kind of tight, but this is the kind of a new experience for us. There's just one other thing I want to mention that I think is really important to the future of wildlife conservation in Utah, to the future of the Division of Wildlife and all sportsmen in this state. Today there's an email going out to the Division of Wildlife Resources announcing a new program within the division. It'll be followed up with a news release in the next few days. But as you know, one of our top priorities in this agency has been for several years to recruit new anglers and hunters and encourage people to be supporters of wildlife conservation. There's a real need to make sure that we continue to have people interested in those sports, because that has been the primary basis for funding for wildlife conservation for more than a century. And we need to keep people engaged in hunting and angling and wildlife watching and other things that increase their interest in wildlife and wildlife conservation. We have looked at our neighboring states and talked about what's working in their states in the way of recruitment and retention. And we'll be announcing to the division today and to the public within a couple of days a new wildlife recreation program in the division. And it will unite and coordinate all of our recruitment and retention efforts into one place in the division, into our outreach section. It'll be a major part of the effort in that section. We'll hire a new coordinator for this new wildlife recreation program, and it'll combine the current programs of community fisheries and youth fishing clubs, dedicated hunters and volunteers, event coordination such as the fair and outdoor expos, various hunting venues like ISE and the Western Hunting and Conservation Expo, the Great Salt Lake Nature Center at Farmington Bay, hunter education, shooting ranges, shooting sports, and watchable wildlife. They'll all be combined into one program. And the goal of this program is to provide hands-on wildlife experiences for young hunters and anglers, and even for people that have left the hunting and fishing programs to encourage them back. And so we want to give them as many hands-on experiences as we can. Now, the division can't do this all alone. This is going to be require a massive volunteer effort and a huge coordination effort with all of the conservation groups in the state and people that are not affiliated with conservation groups that want to participate in helping raise interest in hunting and fishing in Utah. And so it's going to be a big part of what we do around here for the next few years. As you all know, the North American model of wildlife conservation is built upon hunters and anglers who have stepped forward and funded wildlife conservation across the continent, and we're in danger of losing that funding base with kids being distracted into other sports, into team sports and other recreational opportunities. And we need to make sure that we're giving kids every opportunity we can to engage in hunting and fishing. If we lose that connection between generations, then we lose that funding base and we lose one of the very basic tenets of the North American model of wildlife conservation, which is funding by hunters and anglers. So we're going to call on the public in a big way to help us with this. And it's going to take a massive volunteer effort, and we're going to do everything we can to reattach our young people in this state back to hunting and fishing opportunities. There's a lot of things that we do that become gateways to those, to eventually getting them back as lifetime hunters and anglers. For example, the archery in the schools program, which we've gotten into in a big way in Utah. What we found is people that, what they found across the country is young people that engage in the archery in the schools program move on to engage in hunting and other angling opportunities, and the archery in the schools program becomes a gateway to those eventually becoming supporters of hunting and fishing. There's shooting sports, other shooting sports, ranges across the state can become venues to encourage kids and others to get back into hunting and shooting sports. Watchable wildlife gets people excited about wildlife again and gets them interested in participating in activities such as hunting and angling. So we're going to combine all of our efforts that we've had spread all over our agency into one area, one program. We're going to hire someone that can really get this thing going, and then we're going to build on what we have, and this is going to be a major focus for the division for the next several years. You're going to hear a lot about it as time goes along, but I'm convinced that the future of wildlife in this state depends on our young people engaging in outdoor activities, and we've lost way too many of them. And the demographics are really telling. Our hunting public is aging. As you can see, the group right here, they're not a bunch of kids. And you have to be replaced. That's what this program is designed to do, to replace you old guys that have engaged in this your whole life. And we're going to call on you. You're going to have to help us. This division can't do this alone. This is going to be engaging the public. So we're really excited about it internally. We've had a number of internal meetings. We're going to move forward on this quite rapidly. We've seen some good things from other states. We're going to glean the best parts of what's happening in other states and incorporate them into our program here in Utah and tailor it to our specific needs here in Utah and make this go forward. So if there's any questions, I'll try and answer them. There'll be an internal memo going out today, and within the next day or two, there should be a news release on this too. So, but we're very excited as an agency to get this going and to make it successful. Any questions?
Have we got questions? How about the telephone people first? John or Jake, any questions?
No, for me. Sounds good, though.
Yeah, and how about Dell?
Are we going to get a copy of that?
You'll get a copy of
information going out?
Yeah, you're considered internal, Dell, so you'll get a copy.
Okay.
We'll make sure you get a copy.
Thank you.
And how about Southeast Region, Mike?
I think it sounds like a great idea, and I'm looking forward to doing what I can do to assist in the program. I think there are lots of opportunities.
Northern Region, Jason?
Justin.
Justin, I'm sorry. God.
Ernie, I think it's a great program, and I'm looking forward to seeing this thing implemented statewide and also in the region. And Dean's made a concerted effort to come out and appraise all our folks of these changes. So exciting changes. We're looking forward to it.
Bruce, Southern Region?
Yeah, I met with Dean yesterday over this, and it did sound like a great program. I think it'll fit in with what we're trying to do down here real well.
Outstanding. I haven't got the central region on the video. Is anybody there, John?
No, central. There's nobody in the central.
Nobody yet. Okay, mighty fine. Any questions from inside this room then? And for the benefit of others, we've got approximately 15 or 16 public members here, in addition to about 10 division folks, so maybe more. So any questions for Director Karpowitz from anybody? I'll just add, I've been waiting for this announcement for maybe 3 years, and that's a great step forward, and there's a lot of present and past board members who are absolutely delighted.
We've been, it's not like we haven't been doing anything in this regard. We've been doing it in bits and pieces spread all over the agency. What this will do is pull it all together into one place, one coordinated program, with the responsibility to make it go forward, and I'm really optimistic that by doing that and adding some resources to it, we're gonna add some people and some budget to it so that we can really make it go and give it some added emphasis. But we think it's critically important.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Did have one question over here.
Yes, sir.
I would like to add that.
Could we have your name, please?
Yes, Jason Housman. And we as Housman, I represent the San Pete Valley Housman. We'd like to be part of this. I mean, we're the only non-consumptive permit you guys sell, the only one. And we can take all these kids. These kids can go with us. They can go in a big group, and we can show them a lion up close, a lion or a bear. And I think all of us would volunteer our time to be part of it, you know? We want these cats. We want to be able to show these kids cats. I don't want to see the day that my kids can't see a cat. It's a big deal, and it's a first step. It's an easy hunt that these kids can go on and enjoy it, and it's exciting to them.
That certainly ought to be a part of it.
The two geek eyes in this, I think, are both taking notes right now. So, thank you. Anybody else?
And that's all I have for an update, Ernie, unless you have any other questions on other issues.
No, I think that'll do it. Okay, let's move on to our first action item, additional late season antlerless elk permits, with Anise presenting.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today I'll be presenting just a few additional permits for some antlerless elk. As you recall, our last board meeting, you guys approved the 1,450 permits. Those were mostly early season hunts. What we asked our managers to do is basically recommend early season hunts first, and then look through, let the summer get basically done, and then reevaluate if they needed additional permits. And then they've done that, and now have come back with just a few more additional permits. And there's three units where we're recommending additional permits. Two of them are in the Manti unit, where a pretty large wildfire occurred that burned up some transitional deer range where elk usually winter. And to deal with that, we would like to harvest a few more elk just to make sure that we're not over utilizing those areas that burned. And keep those elk, from maybe dropping down on top of deer that maybe when they're a little bit lower. And then the third unit is in the northern region. It's on our Echo, Hannaford Echo Wildlife Management Unit, where because of drought conditions, the winter forage is not going to be there, and we want to reduce that elk population slightly to make sure, again, we've got quite a few deer and elk that winter there, and we don't want to affect the deer by having too many elk on top of them as well. And a lot of this, is precautionary depending on what the winter brings. So if we have a rough winter, we may end up with problems regardless of what we do here. But, these are just things we're trying to do to get ahead of things. One thing that did change from the memo that went out is the date that these permits will go on sale. Initially, we had October 18th as a date. After the licensing folks looked at it, they would prefer September 20th be the date where those permits go on sale. Basically go on sale on a first-come, first-served basis, like we did the last 1,400 or so permits.
September 20th?
Yes.
Which is a week from tomorrow, so yeah. We'll get a news release out today and notify the public. We also want the public to know there's still some general season antlerless elk tags available online, and they can go buy those. And as well as our spike bull and any bull permits, there's still some of those available.
Yeah, and on the Manti unit, just to add, the forest has asked permittees to also, get off of that area as well where it burned to basically help it recover. And the region has, talked to their local sportsmen, and they do agree that it would be a good thing to basically take some pressure off that area. So that's all I have on that agenda item. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
These last 205 permits go on sale on the 20th of September.
Yes.
The other 1,450 that we approved, are they on sale now?
Yeah, they already went on sale.
So they already went on sale.
I think they're mostly gone.
There's still some available.
There's still
online.
Some, but the response has been good. People have been coming in and buying up those permits then.
Yeah, there's a pretty high demand for antlerless elk permits because it's a hunt that, can get a good amount of meat in your freezer and usually is not that cost prohibitive to do. So
I have just one question concerning that. These were in areas where you've got these last 205 were a fire-related
right.
issue in these areas. Statewide, I know there's a big concern about the drought, about the winter feed. I know a number of livestockmen have been told we're gonna cut your permits. You're gonna have to do something different. Is this enough? Are these 1,450 on the early and these 205 in the late, is that going to be enough to help mitigate that?
We believe so. I mean, as far as the elk population goes, we already had 13,000 permits initially.
Mm-hmm.
So these are just in addition to those. So, on a population of roughly 70,000-75,000 elk, you're putting a pretty good dent in it by issuing that many permits. Again, is it enough? You really never know until you see what the
winter
is.
You don't know until halfway through the winter, and it's going to be a little bit too late to go out and take them in the in the middle of the winter. The public outcry would be, I'm sure, quite large then.
Yeah, and that's why we asked initially our managers to deal with most of these hunts on early on, so we can actually harvest a lot of these animals before they reach the winter range. And then we added these few just to make sure that we're not having too many animals on the winter range. Again, we have quite a few permits already in place on a lot of these units where we have issues where we're over objective. So hopefully, I think we have enough permits to deal with the issues. Again, if we have a catastrophic winter, then that's a different issue. For an average winter, I think we'll be in good shape.
And we'll keep watching it, Calvin. I mean, we can react fairly quickly if we get into some real dire circumstances, but this is based on what we know right now,
right.
And it's hard to tell. A month ago, we had no idea the southern region was going to end up in a flood situation.
It's going to take off and actually have some green grass.
They're actually looking pretty good.
So. Good.
Yeah, the reports I get from the southern region, a lot of the units have actually a lot of good regrowth from the last few storms.
I visited with a rancher that ranches in the southern region. I said, did you get any rain last night? And he says, last night was the first night since the 7th of July we did not get rain. He said, we've had enough. If you can, pull some further north. And I said, well, if you'd send it, I'd appreciate it. So, yeah, they've been getting a lot of rain down there, so I'm sure their range has kind of turned around from what it was looking like a couple of months ago.
I'll go through and ask for questions from the board then. Del Brady?
Ernie, I don't have any questions. I support it.
Okay. And John Bear?
No, I don't have any questions. I think they've done a good job going about it. I think it's good to get them off the range earlier in the year rather than later, and I think he's done a good job. So.
Yep. Mike King?
No questions.
And Jake?
No questions, and it rained at my house last night.
we're very jealous up in the northern part of the state. I do have one question for the northern region folks. Heretofore, I believe on the Hennifer Echo hunts, there has been some limited ATV use allowed under division supervision to access the area. Is that going to be true again this year?
Ernie, just for clarification, no, this year it will just be foot or horseback.
Only
there were a couple of years. There were a couple of years where we did allow ATV access, but for this year, it's just our plan is just foot or horseback.
Okay, and that'll be advertised so people don't get surprised.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. With that, are there questions from the public in the Salt Lake office? Yes, sir. If you'd stand up and maybe come on over here, if you would, where the mic can pick you up when we get it. It's good enough? Oh, okay.
It's Jason Adamson again, and I love to hunt these elk as much as I do the cats, and I think that we've killed the heck out of the elk over the last 5 years, and that we could look at this on an optimistic base. It's really easy to sell these tags. If we do need to get rid of them, it's no problem to get rid of them on short notice. I agree totally with the director. It's not a problem selling those tags and getting those elk taken out. We have had a ton of rain. We live on the Manti. We feel like we're being pummeled. And we've watched our elk herds go down and down and down. And then to issue more tags, planning on a bad winter, why can't we be optimistic about this? And hope we have another medium winter, and we've got far less elk on that range than we had 5 years ago. It can easily handle it. And with our rains, we've had substantial rain. Those burns have came up. We've got good grass in them. I think we can handle it. We had a lot more elk a few years ago than we do now by a long shot. Why do we need to kill the factory planning for the worst? Let's plan for the best and keep them.
That sounds like a question for Justin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good thought. Right. Oh, there you are. Sorry, Justin.
Sorry, what's the question?
Justin Shannon responding for the division.
Why do we need to kill them?
Oh, why do we?
On the mantle.
Yeah. So this is a little different. I mean, we had that 50,000 acre Sealy fire, and some of it burned hotter than others. And we would just like to keep, you know, the pressure off of that for 2 or 3 years to let that grow. So we're trying to be surgical. These hunts are directed at elk that are going to use that specific area, and so we're not trying to wipe out the whole mountain. It's just what can we do to help solve the problem there. And the Forest Service has been on board, the sportsmen are on board, and it's probably wise management to give that ground a little bit of relief to grow more grasses. So
what are the numbers of those herds now versus what they were 5 years ago?
We're actually up. We're slightly above objective, and so killing these elk isn't going to hurt us in that regard.
Not objective, but to where they were
right,
5 years ago.
5 years ago.
Now.
We do. We have more elk today slightly than we did than we did 5 years ago. That's been an extremely stable unit for us. So I'd say we're just a few over. Locally, that might not be the case. I mean, on a given drainage, it may not be the case, but on the entire Manti unit, we're slightly higher than we were 5 years ago.
So will these be just directed at a certain area in Manti, or will they be the whole Manti unit? Or?
No, these hunt boundaries are already preset, and they're around that Sealy fire. So we won't be killing elk on the southwest Manti. It'll just be elk adjacent to that fire.
There was another? Yes, sir.
Andy Lyon from Manti, Utah. When you refer to the sportsman being on board, I've heard it a couple times. Who is that?
Yeah.
What is that group that you're referring to?
Yeah, in this case, we have...
If I may ask,
that's fine. That's a fair question. We have several people locally that we deal with in Carbon and Emory that on our side of the mountain at least. And we checked with SFW and others, and they understand what we're up against, and they were okay with it.
Okay.
And we're not planning for worst case scenario. This is very few permits, really, in the big scheme of things. You're talking 11 to 12,000 elk on the unit. So, 200 permits is probably going to kill 100 cows. So it's really not extreme.
But we've already got 13,000 statewide.
Statewide, right? Yeah. But still, again, that is not extreme when you talk about a species that, continuously produces the same amount of calves. There's no, mortality is fairly constant. So it is an extreme, I guess. It may seem that way because we're adding permits, but if anything, our elk population continues to grow, and we want to put a, you know, put a lid on it.
How many elk did we lose to the fires? There were talks of 100 men that died in that fire.
You know, we heard rumors of these big bundles of elk that we lost, and we could never verify it. We, you know, people would call and say, I heard X amount of elk were killed, and we'd say, we'd love to go see it. Nobody, we could never find anyone to show us. So did we lose elk? Maybe, but we didn't document grundles of them like we heard.
There were quite a few pictures from the west.
On
the west, Nebo, when that fire came through Indianola.
I don't know in regards to that one. I thought we were still talking the Sealy one. There's, so I don't know over there.
I mean, from that fire, there have been quite a few pictures. Pictures of some nice bulls that burned and cows, calves. You know, there was some mortality from those fires, definitely.
Sure.
And there have been pictures going around town. We've lived down in Fairview, and we've seen the pictures, and we know
excuse
that we're all killed by the fire.
Go ahead, Boyd.
We can't hear the conversations or what's going on. Dale would like someone to either sit by a mic or to turn up the volume or something, please, Stacy.
Tell you what, I think what we'll do is how about we take that chair right there for future comments and questions.
Yeah, we do have Greg Clyde from the Central Region that can talk to that fire and maybe if there were animals that he knows of. That
yeah, let me just step a little closer to the mic here. We did lose animals in that Wood Hollow fire. We've had officers confirm 65 head that were killed there. And some of those elk do migrate at times off the northwest Manti onto that side, and therefore we did not issue any extra cow tags in that area because of the loss. And with the drought, we did have good regrowth with the later rains that we got. So our recommendation was not to recommend any permits there. So we're looking at it surgically, as Justin mentioned, in certain areas and other areas where we felt like we were good, we were sufficient with the number that we recommended earlier. There was no change. Uh-huh. So we're on board with you.
So you would assume there's probably some mortality from the Huntington fire also?
Likely there'd be some, yes. And even not only elk, but deer. Fawns can't outrun the fire. We probably lost, at least on the Wood Hollow fire, I know we probably lost, you know, probably all of the fawns in that area.
Yeah, same with the calf crop.
Same with the calf crop.
So the elk have already been hit pretty hard. And
in the areas where there were fires.
If we lost the calf crop in there, wouldn't that be sufficient?
Possibly not.
Okay, that's all I'm asking.
Elk migrate from drainage to drainage. When you have a fire, you get good growth in that fire. Elk will move in from other areas because of the new growth. And you can overgraze an area quickly that way.
I'm just asking if you've lost your calf crop, and I don't know, you're probably, what, 1 to 2 calves per cow? If you lost your calf crop in that area, that's pretty sufficient loss.
It can be. Yeah, and we're looking at that.
And could we look at it optimistically? And as the winter goes on, if it's a severe winter, then take those 200 rather than take them now?
Well, we'd like to take those 200, but we are looking at it optimistically, and we can come back with more if we need to. We're looking at it as an average winter. And we could end up with a hard winter, and that's where we're trying to hold off on most of the areas.
Yeah.
There's just a few areas like this one that we're looking at.
But if you have a mild winter, you can't bring them back once they're dead. They're gone.
Well, elk spring back really fast. We can't bring them back.
I hate to see the factory get killed.
Yeah.
Sterling Brown, Farm Bureau.
Sterling Brown with Utah Farm Bureau. 205 was the number. Is that total of those three units, or what is the
correct
breakdown for the three units?
Yeah, that is total of the three units.
Nope.
So there's 75 permits on the Gordon Creek Price Canyon unit, 100 permits on the Moreland Stump Flat unit, and then 30 on the Hennifer Echo unit.
30, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
That's in addition to the permits that were previously approved. Any further questions on the presentation? Then I do not have any comment cards from the public on this topic. If anyone wishes to make a comment, would you stick your hand up and fill out a card? Are there any members of the public at any of the other locations?
None here in the Northeast region, Ernie.
Okay, that's got it then. All the public is right here in Salt Lake. So then I'll close this off to public input and open it up to the board. I'll add just a thought. In my opinion, this is really about saving deer as opposed to trying to take out additional elk. If we have even a medium winter, the deer are going to suffer when the elk take over all the good browse. So, and I'm all in favor of protecting deer at this point because we're not having any trouble growing elk herds anytime we want to, but we're struggling trying to get the deer herd back up where everybody wants it. So, with that, let me open it up to the board then. And I'll take a roll call vote when we get to that point.
Ernie, Jake Albrecht here.
Yeah, Jake.
I just want to make a comment. A year ago, we had the Clear Creek fire here in Sevier County, and people were concerned about, you know, the habitat and the quakies and everything. And the difference of what 1 year does in an area like that is incredible. And I think it's very good that Justin and them guys are on board ahead of the game, making sure that we keep some of those animals off that, so those quakies and that bee comes back where it's supposed to. So I support this.
Thank you. Chair will entertain a motion.
Hey, Ernie, I'll make a motion.
A rare opportunity.
From the Northeast region.
A rare opportunity. Go ahead, Dell.
You're right. I make a motion that we approve the numbers as presented by the DWR.
I'll second that motion.
And who seconded?
Jake.
So motion by Dell, second by Jake. Recommendation that we approve the additional elk permits as presented. We'll do a roll call vote. First, I'll grab the Salt Lake office. All in favor?
Aye.
And we have both Bill Fenimore and Calvin in support. And now, Adele, it's your motion.
I support it.
Okay. And Jake?
I support it.
Mike?
I support it.
And?
John.
John, sorry.
I thought you forgot me there, Ernie.
I did for a second.
We're trying.
Good luck. Yeah, I'm in support.
Very good. Motion carries unanimous then. And we're on to agenda item number four, increased bison permits on the Henry Mountains.
I'll present that, Ernie. I'm Justin Shannon, wildlife manager out of Price. Appreciate the opportunity to present this today. We took a flight in early August on the Henry Mountain Bison Unit, and we counted more animals than what the model had previously indicated should be there. We went back and we reworked our model, came up with an estimate of roughly 48 animals over objective. And so the purpose of this recommendation is to add 60 additional permits in addition to a fourth season on that unit, so that way we can be at or below objective of our population postseason. And what we're recommending is an increase in 1,500 choice permits and 45 cow permits, and we're going from 60 total to 120. We met with the Bison Committee, ran this by them, and they were comfortable with the fourth season and 60 additional permits, and our recommendation is to see if we can't do that to help us get to objective this next year.
Very good. Questions from the board? Bill?
Ernie, I have a question. Jake Albrecht.
Go ahead, Jake.
Justin, a couple questions. A year ago, we were concerned that maybe we was going to kill too many buffalo down there. And I remember the director made a comment that he was very concerned and wanted to be right on and everything. What's changed in that? Are we using a model that's different, or did we miss some buffalo a year ago on the count? Were we able to track those collared animals? A little more explanation, if you would.
Sure. Thanks for the question, Jake. Yes, we have used a model for about the past 5 years, and since I've been there, 4 years, every year we've flown, the model has been higher than our survey, and so we've gone with the model, the more liberal of the two. And last year when we flew, we had 27 GPS collars out on the ground, and we saw 25 of them from the air, which is about 92-93% sightability, and we felt really good with that, but that was still under the model estimate. This year when we flew, we found 33 of 33 GPS collared animals, and so we feel extremely comfortable with this flight. And as a manager, I wish I had flights like this more often. And I'm really glad we have this USU study going on, because it helps us identify, are we counting the collared animals? What is our sightability? And I don't like coming to the board saying I'm over, but if I had to, I'd much rather be 40 animals over than, say, 150 or so. I'm glad we have the ability to catch this now, while we can still handle it with the hunt structure and framework that we have for this fall. Does that help answer your question, Jake?
Yes, and one more question. Are these animals down there, are they maintaining their collars during the annual year, other than what is killed or whatnot, or are they losing those?
We have, Utah State's been quite frustrated, and so have we over some of the malfunctions in the collars. That's why we're going with the GPS approach on this. We know we have 33 well-functioning collars now, and that's helped us in our survey. There have been some hiccups with the project. We're trying to address them with Utah State. But still, 33 collars is a fairly good sample size to help in a sightability study like this.
Thanks, Justin.
Yeah.
Additional questions from the board members? Bill?
Yeah, Justin, you said 120 permits total.
Uh-huh.
The chart that I have says 116.
Yeah, those are the permits that are going through the drawing. There's four conservation permits on top.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I should have said 116 public.
Okay.
Calvin? I have a question. This is Mike and Price.
Go ahead, Mike.
My question, Justin, is what's the current range condition like on the Henrys, and how has it been affected by the drought or recent rains, if any? I'm not sure what the status is down there.
No, yeah, that's a good question, Mike. This June, it looked really rough. When we were down there collaring bison, it was in rough shape. We have had some monsoonal rains that have helped, and there's parts of the Henry Mountains right now that are fairly green. The north end is looking quite well, and there's still some issues with the southern end drought-wise. It would have been nice to have a higher snowpack this last winter and some spring precip. We didn't get it, but the monsoonal rains that we have got the last 2 months have helped. But it's not what it was the last 2 years, where we had quite a bit of rain down there.
Do you expect then that these additional permits might help range conditions any, or at least not deteriorate it further?
Mike, I think as a manager, the most appropriate thing I can do for the range is to be at or below objective. And these 60 permits are surely going to help with that. And to be honest, I think it's about what I can fit in the four-season framework that I have there, and still give once-in-a-lifetime hunters a quality hunting opportunity. It's not the largest range that we have in the state, and I feel comfortable with the recommendation to help range to the extent we can.
Calvin?
Yes. Question. You say you flew it in August. What are your total numbers? What are your projections for total numbers?
Sure. Yeah, so the model before said we should be at 384, and we counted 410. And Kent Hersey here in Salt Lake, we sat down and with him and worked the model again, and the model now says we should be at about 432. So even though we saw 33 of 33 collared animals, we're not saying that's 100% sightability. We're saying the population's still 22-25 animals above that.
What's the object? Your population objective?
Sure.
And your management plans?
Yeah. So after the hunts are done, we should be at 325 adult animals.
Mm-hmm.
So 120 permits should help us get there.
And you're 425, 435 ish.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Pre-season.
Then
you deduct the harvest.
Right. So you take 120 harvest. Do you expect to take all 120? What percentage of that harvest?
I expect somewhere between 95 and 100. So if I can go from 430 kill 100, that'd put us at 330. And then there's some associated natural mortality that we always include in that. We've lost two collared cows already. So there is some degree of natural mortality, but I feel like we can get there or extremely close with it, depending on the hunt success. And that's always a variable. It's always hard to predict exactly what success they're going to have, but historically it's been fairly good with the bulls and 70% with the cows.
So you do have a pretty good success on this hunt. Higher in the bison hunt than you do on most other hunts?
Yes. Yeah.
Just because there's a limited number and the hunters are going to work harder to get that animal.
Is that
the way it is versus the elk? I mean, in your elk management, you're not going to get that high a percentage.
Yeah, with the bull hunts or the hunter choice hunts, we're about 93% success. And then the cow hunts, that first one's about 78 and the last one's about 60. So the further on in the season you go, the harder it is to kill them. So.
Okay.
If there's no further board questions, are there any questions from the audience in Salt Lake?
Just one thing I would like to add, to clarify.
This is Anish speaking.
Yeah, Anish Saudi, executive coordinator. So, as we go, this information is helping us improve our model and improve the sightability as well. So I think these, I guess you would say, setbacks that we see are only improving how we manage that herds. In the past, the survival rate we've used we found now that we have collars on these animals is higher than, so they're surviving much better than we anticipated they were in the past, and that's some of the reason why the overestimates have been coming. So we're improving, and I think as this study goes on, it's only going to get better. So.
Ernie, can I ask one more question? Jake here.
Go ahead, Jake.
Justin, on the handout, it says the Henry Mountains Bison Committee has been informed of the proposed change and agrees. Was that fairly close to all of them, or was there other people in there that wanted you to take more or less or whatever?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jake. I mean, the BLM and the sportsmen, they were comfortable with the 60. And there were permittees that said, hey, the division's coming to us asking if we can double permits. No brainer. Yes, let's do that. There was one permittee in particular that was a little bit frustrated, didn't think that 60 permits was enough. But at the end of the meeting, I asked him, can you live with us doubling permits? And he said, yeah, I can live with it. And listen, Jake, if there are drought conditions down there, I'm not opposed to being more aggressive with it to help the range. It's just with this year and the framework we have, I feel like doubling permits is maximizing the opportunity, helping us get to objective, and keeping a quality hunt for those guys. And if we need to address things further and be a little bit more aggressive next year, we can have that conversation with the committee moving forward. So.
Yeah, I understand where you're at with your permit allocation, because I've been on the Henry's a lot with bison hunts, and you get too many people down there, and it's very frustrating. But I'm supportive of what you're doing. I just heard some higher numbers from, I think, some of the permittees down here than what I'm seeing here. So let's get through this year and move on.
I'm going to say, this is Calvin again. That was my concern too. In talking with some of the permittees, they're concerned, is this enough?
Yeah.
I know we don't want to decimate the herd down there because it's one of the few that we have,
Another of the permittees said, you know, it's his winter permit, and he's already been told he cannot take any animals down there, any of his livestock. He's got 100% cut this year. And so he's a little frustrated. If he's taking that big of a hit, are the wildlife keeping pace with that? Are they taking enough for the drought conditions? Yeah. And I know that was his concern.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. Yeah, let's double the permits and take some out. According to him, though, is that enough? And I don't know how you balance that to reduce the numbers that it's fair for one and fair for all.
Right. And initially when this objective was set of 325, mm-hmm. it was there's a lot more AUMs that could be used by bison that are not being used by
right.
bison. So it does take into consideration, you know, those drought years and everything. So we did try to set an objective that was, you know, aligned with what the range can carry.
The range could carry more, but you pulled that back to account for that
and
account
was,
for years like this.
That was a conversation that we had at the committees, and that everybody felt that it could be attained without harming the range.
Is the 60 regular permits, is that an ongoing every year, or does that vary a little bit according to what your numbers are?
Yeah, that'll vary based on what calf production is the previous year, and so that'll change. We'll come with a different recommendation number-wise every year.
Okay.
Ernie, can I still ask a question?
Question? Mm-hmm.
Sterling Brown with Utah Farm Bureau. If I'm looking at the numbers right, my question is that the doubling of the permits brings us to objective. Is that correct?
Correct.
So we're not bringing the overall herd down.
No.
Given the drought conditions, we're bringing it to objective because there's a higher count on the mountain.
That is correct.
Any further questions? We don't have any of the comment cards from the public, but is there any member of the public that wishes to comment? Sterling Brown, and fill out a card for us afterwards, please.
Okay. Sorry about that. And just a late thought here. Sterling Brown with Utah Farm Bureau, just concerned, has been expressed in some way this morning in the discussion, and related to my question just a moment ago, as we compare what's taking place with wildlife numbers as what's taking place with livestock numbers, if the double of the permit or the doubling of the number from 60 to 120 brings us to objective, is that enough? I would argue that it's not. If we're looking at habitat as our fundamental common denominator and taking care of from a wildlife and livestock component, I think it's arguable that livestock has been mentioned taking 100% cuts. I would argue that doubling the permit is not adequate. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further public comment? For everybody's information, I do have an input from Sportsmen from Fish and Wildlife, a phone call yesterday. They participated in the counts. They've spent a lot of time down on the Henrys this summer, and they are supportive of the division recommendations. And I should have also added under our antlerless elk comment that Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife supported those two, and I failed to mention that at the time we were considering it. So with that, then I'll close this off to public comment and open it up to the board for discussion and/or motions. Bill?
Yeah, Justin, has BLM and Forest Service kind of signed off on these recommendations as well?
Yeah, the BLM is. They're on that committee, and they were comfortable with the doubling the permits.
This is Calvin Crandall in the Salt Lake. You know, back to Sterling's comment, if this just brings us back to even, should we be looking at this many permits all the time? You know, should this be done more regular, and do we need to have more permits because of the drought conditions to bring that objective? Maybe we need to be below objective for a couple of years.
A couple of things with that. As Anise was talking about earlier.
And this is Justin Shannon speaking.
Sorry about that, Ernie. Yeah, Justin Shannon. As Anise was saying earlier, we have lots of AUMs on that mountain that are allocated for bison that are not being used. So it's not like we're running 100%. Everybody else is running 50%. We're in that same boat as well. And in addition to that, one thing that we've always, as a manager, one thing I look at is balance in the quality of these hunts. These are once-in-a-lifetime hunts, and if there are crowding issues, that becomes problematic as well. And again, if I need to address this moving forward, I will. If drought conditions are such, I don't care where we're at on our AUM scale. The habitat is what's really important. And we feel this is a very appropriate recommendation to double the permits to get to objective and just be as transparent as we can. We were over. This is what we'd like to do this year to at least get to objective, which should help our cause.
You say that was a concern that one of the ranchers had that's on the bison committee. Sure. That this needs to be done on a regular basis. Let's keep it at objective more frequently instead of letting it get up too high and then bring them back down. That was his concern, is this should be done. We should have had more animals taken last year so that we weren't so far over objective this year.
Right. Again, though, to clarify, last year we had a great flight as well. And even with that great flight with 93% sightability, the model still said we had more objectives, so we went with the more of the two, the more liberal of the two. And so we've tried to be liberal and aggressive while maintaining and striking that balance of being at objective. So.
Okay, thanks.
This is, sorry to interrupt, this is Mike King and Price. I just think that this is fairly aggressive. The numbers, and I think I'm supportive of it, but maybe just to get some perspective on this, if you've got 400 animals in this population, maybe a few more than that, and you've got, what, maybe 160 bulls compared to 240 cows. I don't know what the ratio is exactly. I asked Bill Bates here in Price what it might be, but of those 240 cows that are in that population, you're issuing 90 permits, right? Essentially 90 cow permits?
No, it's 60 hunter choice and 60 cow, but you got to remember some of those hunters choice do harvest cow. So.
Yeah, well, even if they just chose 60 cow sure. permits, you're still taking and they're all successful, you're still taking a very significant portion of that cow population through harvest. You know, 400 animals, 420 animals is not a very large number for a sustainable population to begin with. So I personally think that those numbers are, you know, they're pretty aggressive there. I don't think you're holding back much at all. So. I think you're making some significant impact there.
Any further comment?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, this is John Bear coming to you from parts unknown. but kind of going along with what Mike said, this is, in my opinion, this is extremely aggressive, and the fact that the division was able to get all the players to a table and to agree on this in itself is somewhat of a miracle in my book. And if you tried to increase your permits on any other once-in-a-lifetime unit by 100% or any of our good elk units or anything, you'd have a complete chaos. And the fact that Justin and the division was able to get this okayed by, sounds like, the majority of the players, I think, is a good thing. I think it's extremely aggressive, but I think the conditions warrant it. So I would say that I'm definitely in favor of the increase. I wouldn't be in favor of any more, but I think at this point what they've asked for is very appropriate.
Would you care to make that a motion?
Sure, I'll make the motion that we approve the bison permit recommendation from the division as presented.
Ernie, Jake here, I'll second that, and you let him make my motion. Thanks.
I was getting nervous, Jake. So we have a motion by John with a second from Jake that we approve the bison permits as presented. And we'll do a roll call vote again. John?
I'm in favor of the motion I just made.
Yep. Jake?
In favor.
Dell?
I'm in favor of the motion.
And Mike?
Yes.
And Calvin and Bill?
Yes.
Yes.
The motion carries unanimous.
Ernie, one question.
Yes, sir.
Where is John Bear?
I heard a story that he was up on the Manti scouting cougars, but I can't verify that.
Okay.
Any comment, John?
I'm right here.
That's what I thought.
Okay, that completes that action item then, and we're on to the action log item. This is an informational presentation, and I'll remind the board members and everybody that no official board action will be taken on this topic today. However, the division is responding to the action log item, the request for information that we put on the action log at the last meeting. So with that, Mr. John Shivick.
Good morning, board. Been asked to address this board motion that the division do an expeditious review of the data and to provide the board members their analysis, conclusions, and recommendations concerning the possible over-harvest of female cougars. So what I did is went back to the data that we have on the topic. There's a couple different ways to look at it. The first and most obvious one was to look at the quotas in each of the units and statewide to see where the number of females, what the number of females were being taken relative to the quota. And the quota is pretty simple. Statewide, there's still another 52 females that could have been harvested. And then if you look at it within each region or at each area, cougar management area, none of those areas surpassed the quota in terms of female take. So from that perspective, in terms of the numbers that we were, you know, the approved numbers, it was difficult for me to argue that we're over-harvesting females when we haven't even achieved quotas in any of the places. Another way to look at it, which I think is important too, is relative to how we look at these numbers in, according to the plan, the Cougar Management Plan. And within the plan, we look at some other targets, not just numbers of females or quotas, but rather the proportion of adult females that are taken in the population in Cougar Street per day. The data are very preliminary at this point, but when I go and look at those numbers that we have so far, some of the units are higher, some of the units are lower, and it seems that we're right on target plan-wise, where I'm expecting after the next year or so, you know, some will recommend increasing, some will recommend decreasing, and that's just going to be automatic and according to the plan. So based on those two bits of information, I didn't really see any evidence for any kind of an emergency state. I think there will be some changes made. I think we will make some recommendations next year on harvest and permit numbers, but I couldn't come up to any conclusion that there's an emergency per se.
Thank you, John. Questions from the board?
Mr. Chairman, this is John Bear. I got a question.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Some of the, I think you got a bunch of my buddies sitting there in the room with you that hunt the Manti quite a bit. One of the concerns I've been hearing and that I share myself on the Wasatch and the Manti is right here, along the Wasatch Front, we have these sheep units that for, you know, 10 or 12 years now have had very liberal harvest objective quotas on them. And then not 30 minutes down the road, we have the Manti that is one of the most sought after tags, if you look at the drawing odds, and has some of the best lion hunting in my opinion, anywhere in the world. I mean, as far as you look at the access and just the way the country's built and the way it is to hunt it, some of the best hunting there is. And by opening up this whole
area and putting it under one quota system, I can't imagine why anybody would hunt here on the Cascade or even on Timpanogos when in a few short minutes they can be down on the Manti. And to me, that I worry that that's going to take the pressure off of the sheep units, where we want to harvest the calves to help the struggling sheep herd, and pile all that pressure down on the Manti, which is already an extremely popular place to hunt. I mean, that's just, in my opinion, if we're going to make a change, these sheep units need to be carved out, and that needs to just be a totally separate thing. Allowing that and the Manti to run together in any fashion, in my opinion, is a mistake.
Thank you, John. Further questions from the board?
This is Mike from Price. John, what's the overall male harvest of cougars look like in these units? Relatively speaking, it looks like you still have lots of females out there under the quota, but what about the male harvest? What's the trend there over the last few years?
The trend over the last few years for males is essentially flat. I'm just looking at the statewide data. Everything. What happened was, what's interesting, and I understand some of this concern for certain, even statewide, that 2010, 2011 was a big, you know, late snow year. Cats got, there was a significant harvest, I would say. But then if you look at that trend overall, both males, both females, everything for the last few years is flat. There's a little bump, but we've come right back to where we should be, according to this year's numbers that we have so far.
Thank you.
Further questions from the board?
Yeah, this is Calvin Crandall. Why are the sheep units not hunted as well? I'm going to say you've got zero animals were taken out of 11, and then on the Wasatch Manti you've got 36 out of 39. Is it because the Wasatch Manti is closer, it's easy to run up in an afternoon? Is the sheep unit farther away and nobody wants to go there?
Right. You've got all those access issues, and I have to, and I'll address John's question, comment earlier too, and I have to, you know, thank all the houndsmen here. These guys have actually been great in terms of communicating and spending the time and putting in the time and effort. And my analysis of this unit right now is that they've got a good point, and I think John's got a good point too. And I think it's something that I want to look at, or I think we really should look at, in the context of the plan and as we move forward. Is this really a discrepancy that we need to deal with? And perhaps we might. But what I'm suggesting is that we stay the course with our plan and not, I didn't see any reason for an emergency, but I do see a reason to take a look at this when we do develop our recommendations next year. And to try to get things a little bit more into maybe grouped a little bit better, or otherwise address this particular issue. So that's I'd like to look at that more.
The next question I just thought of was, you know, you've got the Wasatch Manta, you've got a huge human population close by also. Do we need to keep the cougar numbers lower so we have less human interference or cougar interference with humans? Is that a big issue?
There's elements of that is an issue, but right now.
I mean, yeah, some people like to see those in their backyard. Other people don't.
I agree.
So, you know, that's another concern. You know, do we need to keep the numbers, the population, a little lower along the Wasatch Front so we don't have the issues with the people?
And those are exactly the things I think we need to think about as we do our recommendations for next year. All that's going to go into the mix. Try to come up with the best.
You want to keep what you've got now, and that we're not too far out of line. Let's keep it and then see what things look like next year.
Right. When I looked at even all the units, what I was, if I'd gone back and looked at our target indicators, and it had said statewide and all the units everywhere, you're hammering these populations, you're gonna have to reduce permits by 25% plus of all everywhere. That would have concerned me, and I would have said, okay, we may need to address this. Or if we were overshooting quotas and things, okay, we may need to address this now. But the way the numbers came out, I think it's way better, especially when we have this climate where we have big years and little years and rain. I would really like to make this decision based on a three-year cycle and a three-year grouping of data, when I can be very confident that the recommendations we make are really defensible. And so for that reason, I'd really recommend that we stay with the plan. I've got good data, and then we can have a bulletproof recommendation next year.
Okay. Further questions from the board? When you say, John, that we would deal with this next year, perhaps in your normal cycle, your next year would be when you would convene the group. Is that correct? Or is next year the three-year plan?
The three-year plan comes up, yeah. So what I'll know in March, April will send the teeth in, April, May, when we'll have our
third year
of everything. And then I think we'll be able to look at it. I'll continue working with the Houndsman groups. I don't know how open we need to do a new committee or anything. I don't think so. I think this would be part of our regular recommendation cycle.
Okay. Any further questions from the public or? Yes, sir.
Got a comment.
Not comments yet. Hold on one. No further questions? I'll call on the cards that I've got in the order I've got them then. Mr. Dan Cockain?
Where do you want me to?
Right here, please.
Dan Cockain, I'm the Alliance Coordinator for Utah Houndsmen Association. And first of all, we'd say we'd like to be a partner with you with these young kids, because that's exactly what we're about, is educating and helping. So, and also I'd like to say we appreciate John looking after these critters for us. He's a good man, and we don't always agree, but we appreciate what he's done, and Kevin, you know, before him. So I sent an email late last night. We've really been trying to work on this, but we agree with John that one of the unintended consequences of the cougar management plan was we took these lions that were intended to be killed on the sheep units, and they've been moved down into the manti units that are accessible, easy to hunt, and we frankly feel like that it is an emergency. You know, we've talked about flying and looking at buffalo. We've talked to houndsmen that are there all the time, every weekend, all winter long. And if a lion walks through that country, he leaves a track. We know it. And the chances are right now, if he leaves a track or she leaves a track, we think that it's about 36% that we're killing the females. She's probably going to die. And on the pimp unit, there was only two lions killed. So what we've created is what the plan is after, a sink source where there's areas where these cats can live, and there's areas where they're harvested, and that area where they're living will feed the area where they're harvested. So this source area is the sheep and goats right now. We think that that would rise it to level of emergency, and to balance that, we protect the sheep, the goats, and also the lions that we're concerned about. The reason they don't get hunted is they're steep and they're hard to access. And I don't know who commented, but we're all getting old and fat, and it's hard to hike up them mountains. So
just wait till you really get older.
That's all that we have. I have a copy of that email if anyone didn't get it. And
I believe every board member has seen it.
Okay. And I just appreciate your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mr. Jason Adamson.
Hello again, guys. I'm representing the San Pete Valley Houndsmen. And, you know, we live there. We're right in this area. And we've hunted all of it over the years, including the sheep units. And I dealt a lot with the Finaz guys and trying to get these cats down. I dealt with John Bear. And John Bear is right on with this. John lives down in that country and he sees what's happening. And these sheep units have had very, very high quotas for years. We've tried to get rid of the cats in the sheep units, and a lot of us had a lot to do with it. We've been willing to help with that. But now when you combine that with the Sand Peak areas, the Manti units, the Nebo units, Central Mountain Nebo, these sheep units are rough. You can't access them. You're hiking, and it's tough, and it burns off regularly. Most of the cats you catch in those sheep units are in holes. Your dogs get beat up. It's a rough place to kill a cat. So we need to create a way that you can basically force guys to hunt those units, because if we have an option of hunting a nice unit like the Manti, guess where everybody's going to go? It's easy access, you can get to your dogs easy. You don't have to hike the face of camp to get to a cat. So if you look at these, if you look at these numbers and look at what happened when these units were open, everybody came down to Sand Pete. Everybody hunted those easy units. Your sheep units, guess what? The temp unit, they harvested two cats. What's that going to do to your sheep over time? Plus, you've got the Salt Lake unit right here where you can't turn a dog loose. So you got your best seed unit right here above Salt Lake. Guess what? It borders your temp unit. And your temp units are not getting hunted. As long as this plan's in place, they're not getting hunted. But in the meantime, the San Pete County is getting annihilated. That's where the majority of your cats came from. There were 94 cats harvested in this unit. Okay, 94 cats. Out of those 94, guess what? Two of them came off temp. So what does that tell you? That tells you we're being pummeled. We're being hammered. And then Ernie brought up a great question on your male harvest. With your male harvest, he said John states that it stayed the same. Do you want to know why it stayed the same? Not because your unit stayed the same, but it would be like taking, let's say your general deer hunt, your harvest is starting to drop. So you say, you know what? In order to get this harvest back up to where it was, we're going to throw the Henrys and the Poncegon in there. Guess what? Your male harvest is going to come up. And what units are going to get hunted? Not your general units. You throw a Henry's unit in there, I'm going to be in the Henry's, and so is everybody else. And we're going to wipe it out in a year, which is what has happened to the Manti. And if we're stuck with this for one more year, we're not going to have a cat to hunt in the Manti. They're going to be gone. And I kid you not, all of us, the majority of the people here are from San Pete County. And we've watched it. And when was the last time you had hunters in here begging you to slow something down? Especially a predator. And granted, you guys are facing tough times with your deer herds and everything else, but you know what? We aren't exterminators. And that's what's happening down there. And that's why your male harvest stayed the same. You take it back to the same units you had before and watch what happens to your male harvest. Your female harvest, out of those 94, 36 females. 36. What was the average age of those cats, John?
Age of the adult females?
No, of all the cats harvested.
I don't have that.
You gave me a while back 1.9 years old. We've got no big cats, no mature cats left. We're down to harvesting babies. And you know what a 1.9 year old is counted as? If it's a female? It's not counted as a female, it's counted as a tom. And why aren't females counted as females? I'm sorry, but if you're a female, you're a female. Shouldn't matter your age. Is that not true, John?
Is that correct?
Adult females. No, there is a difference, because what's going to drive your populations is going to be that reproductive element, the adult female that's going to be reproductive. When you're more likely to die when you're younger, that's where we start paying attention. When we've got the reproductive age, those are the ones that are going to drive the population. Those ones we have to really pay attention to. It's kind of like what I argue with the coyote stuff. If you want to impact the population, you don't do the young dispersers. You get the ones that are set up territorial and reproductive. And it's the same with the cougars and waterbird wildlife.
So what age do we consider it an adult reproductive female? Three. And our average cat being harvested is 1.9 years old. So how do we ever hit a female subquota? We can't. your female subquotas don't mean anything. They shouldn't even be taken. It's not working. Your system is broke. You got a 1.9-year-old female, and we don't count her as a female. We count her as a tom.
As a kitten, right?
As a juvenile.
Juvenile.
Yeah.
How can that give you accurate numbers? It doesn't work.
Let me ask a question here, if I could. This system of breaking animals into adult males, adult females, and juveniles, juvenile females with a break-off age of 3, that's how Utah has managed cougars for 2 decades that I think I can remember.
No, Ernie, we just started using adult females with the most recent plan just 2 years ago.
Really?
Another clarification, Nice just brought up that, all females are counted in terms of quota stuff. So when we're setting the quotas, there's a proportion of the adult, and this is where it kind of gets confusing, there's a proportion of quotas of those adult females that are, or a proportion of all the females go towards the quota, but then there's only a proportion of those that are the adult that help us make the permit adjustments based on the plan.
So you've got 36 out of 94 cats that were harvested were female. That's pretty heavy. And then in order to keep your toms on a flat line, you added premium units into it that weren't part of it before. So now these premium units have been lumped in with the temp sheep units, which, you know, our objective unit that we want to take care of is your sheep units. They're not getting touched. Nobody's hunting them. You got 2 cats harvested off the temp unit. Granted, hunters go where it's easy, and we're doing our best to educate the houndsmen to leave these females alone because, you know, we need everybody involved. We need everybody's help. What we want to do, what we would like to recommend, is that there could be a sub-quota introduced into these units so that the manti would shut down. The Southwest Manti, when that quota was hit, it would shut down and it would force people to hunt these other units rather than focusing on the one easy one and destroying the best cat population we have. If we could just get a sub-quota in there to slow this down, otherwise the majority of your quota is going to come out of that one unit. And it did this year. We've harvested, I believe it was 3 years ago, it was set at 5 cats, then it went to 11. This year they killed 18. And if they fill the 129 quota and you do the same percentage, you're going to be at 26 cats just off the Southwest Manti, which is far too many. With John's numbers, it's supposed to be at 17% female. That's the trigger. Or at 36. I would think that would catch somebody's attention.
The 17 is adult females,
mm-hmm. 17%.
And 36 is all females.
To me, every female is a female. I mean, how do you count a female as something else? It's a female. You know, when you're considering your population, especially when they're being killed at 1.9 years, you know, God has told me that they'll have kittens at 2 years old. So it's in a reproductive state. In 1/10 of a year is all it's missing. That's our average female. Yes, it's way out of whack. The 2 out of 94 in the sheep units to me is a major problem. And keep in mind, we're the only non-consumptive permit you guys sell. Only one. We just like these cats. We like to chase them. We like to see them. And we love to deer hunt. I like the deer hunt as much as the next guy. I'm an avid bow hunter. I want to see the deer herds come back, but I can guarantee you the cats are not your problem. The cats are taking far less. We don't have the cats. We don't have the population anymore. And then again, we'd be very interested in helping out with these kids, and we're in a situation where we can take a group of kids and show them a lion, and it's something I want my kids and my grandkids to be able to see. And in the direction we're headed in the state of Utah with our regressive cats, the cat program, it's going to be real hard to show a kid a cat. Really hard. And that's what we don't want. And, you know, in talking with John, he did see a need that when this plan is done, he's already seeing the signs that it needs to be reduced at least 25%. And 25% only takes you back to where the kill is right now. Not even quite that. We killed 94 out of 129. If you reduce it 25%, you're still not there. So anyway, I thank you guys. Appreciate you listening, and I hope that you'll consider it, because Stampede can't take another year of this. We won't have anything left.
Thank you.
Can I make one clarification to the answer? I did pull the age numbers. I didn't have that in front of me. But the age numbers are actually just going through those units. It's the mean age is 3.3 and 2.6, 3.0, 3.1, 3.4, 3.2, 3.0. So that actually the mean age over those units is more like around 3 or so.
And that's a mean, though, as opposed to an average.
Well, that's, yes.
Is that for this year, Joe?
That's a mean over the last several years, a few years. But the same, if I look at it just this last year, 3.6, 3.6, 3.7, 4.3.
And keep in mind it was a limited entry.
Sure.
Yeah. At that time, when people had time to be selective. That's one thing with a limited entry hunt. It doesn't, people won't get in a rush to take a cat thinking the quota's going to fill. In the quotas, they're killing the first thing they treat. When they've got a limited entry, they've got 6 months to take a good calf. Makes a big difference.
Okay, the last card I have is from Mr. Andy Lyon.
Yes, sir. Andy Lyon from Manti, Utah, and I'm representing myself.
How appropriate, Andy Lyon. Pretty nice, isn't it? Fits.
He's my brother-in-law, if you can believe that, Ernie.
Hey, thanks, John.
We'll consider the source carefully.
Yeah.
You should. You got lions and bears converging on you.
Yeah.
3 minutes.
I would suggest that if we go on for another year like this on the Southwest Manti unit, it's going to be too late. Okay. And then as a houndsman, I'm very concerned for the Manti units, as this unit has been over-harvested for the past 3 years. It would appear to me that the Manti unit is taking the brunt of this new plan. Looking at the numbers from the Wasatch units that are attached to the Manti, they are not getting hunted at all. I believe by placing the Manti with these sheep units, we have been dealt a death sentence, as the numbers clearly indicate this. You have moved the people that were hunting the Wasatch units to the north to the Manti units, where access is much easier. In the end, no one is hunting the sheep units, and this cannot be good for any parties involved. I would ask the board to consider this an emergency and allow the Manti units to be changed to subunits, and that they are closed when the numbers are met from the individual units on the Manti. This would ensure that the lions will not keep being over-harvested on the Manti units and would place the hunters back on the Wasatch units to harvest some of the lions from those units. I believe this would be beneficial to all parties. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. That's very, very brief.
But good, right?
Unlike your brother-in-law.
I didn't say that, John. Are there any further? Yes, sir. And please fill out a card.
I will.
Thank you. Come on up. State your name, please. Start.
Earl Hansen. I'm from Fairview. I'd just like to say, as I look around the room here, I don't see any guides or outfitters with us as houndsmen. And we've continued to invite them to our meetings to try to educate. And as I see this hunt going from the Wasatch to our area down in Sanpete, I was talking to the one outfitter there out of Idaho, and he is just, they are ecstatic. They can come down and hunt our area. They can bring their clients in, and they don't have to hike the mountains like they do up here in the Cascade and Timpanogos area. And they are very glad to come down in our area where they can harvest these cats. And that's why, you know, we don't see any of them here today. And I says, well, how would you like it if we come up in your area in Idaho and hunted in your backyard like you're doing in ours? And he says, oh, I don't want you up there. He says, you're not, you know, he says, I wouldn't even, he says, I, not only I want you there, he says, I wouldn't welcome you at all. And so I would ask you to look at this as an emergency, because we're, you know, we're bringing in, you know, our guides and outfitters, you know, before the week before this harvest objective starts. If you'll go down our highways, you'll see Idaho, New Mexico, Colorado, Wyoming, California, Nevada. I mean, we're just getting bombarded with it. So I would ask you to please consider this as an emergency and make some changes and get us off this Cascade and Timpanogos area. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further from? I will close this off to public input and open it up to the board for discussion and or a motion.
Well, this is informational.
Oh, my geez. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I apologize. I apologize, folks.
Perhaps we need fat guy units and skinny guy units.
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, John.
I just want to again say that, you know, I've having these sheep units included with the manti is a bad thing, in my opinion. I mean, we're taking pressure from where we want it and putting it where there's already plenty of pressure on one of the best units in the world. And I'd hate to see that have to go another year like that. If there's any way we could address that, I think that'd be the thing to do. And I would really hope that John and Kevin, and I think it sounds like they have got the message that we really look at a way of separating those two units and those quotas out of the manti.
Thank you, John. Chair, Director Karpowicz?
I haven't had a chance to talk to John or Kevin about this, so I want to make this kind of a question before we consider where we want to go with this. I'm not hearing much objection to the limited entry portion of these hunts. Is that right, from all of you guys that are here? Those permits are already drawn and in the hands of people, and to mess with those would be really problematic. Plus, that hunt opens November 14th. The next board meeting is November 1st.
Uh-huh.
And that would be the first opportunity that the board could do anything about this.
However, the season opens November 15th.
Well, the harvest objective, not till March. Right?
March 14th, yeah.
March 4th. It seems like there's a couple of options. It sounds like long term, that even John agrees there needs to be some, and the public, we all agree there needs to be a re-examination of how we've combined these units. Short term, though, you could address the quota. Is that right, John? And that wouldn't mess with your long term data set?
Again, I'd like to look at doing adjustments within the confines of the plan. And one difficulty here is if you get one, somebody else, another, I could be in another region where somebody else has a different favorite unit somewhere, and we can end up chasing our tails constantly as people are worried about different scales. And we've spoken about this a little bit, is where I approach a lot of this as a biologist. I'm looking at a larger scale, and I'm looking at a more long term. I recognize that there's bumps in years, and that there's adjustments that need to be made, but I think they're better the way it's designed in the plan, where there are adjustments we know we're going to make, there are adjustments that are already agreed upon beforehand, and I think we can have some wiggle room within the plan, but not
What I'm,
I don't want to just, you know, jump out of it too far.
What I'm trying to understand is it seems like there's a couple of different issues. One is being combined, the units being combined.
Yeah.
And the other is the quota. Is the quota appropriate?
Right. Can I respond
so,
to that?
So, well, let me just finish my thought. I mean, we've just adjusted elk and bison numbers up to accommodate situations. It seems to me there's an opportunity here to let the plan run its course, not mess with the separation of the unit, but perhaps reconsider the total quota as a temporary measure.
And that will be part of, see, that's what we can, what we'll do is even within the plan, we'll make our we'll make our recommendations this next cycle or at the end of the cycle, and the quota adjustments will be are part of that. And I think we can make some, even see, I got to look at the confines of the plan, but I think we've got some wiggle room within that to the next cycle adjust quotas, get things more in alignment. Get things more in alignment. When I looked at the numbers, the way the quotas were come up, is pretty much just what has been done historically, what they have been for the previous years. We know a little bit more about the system now, because of the information we've been gathering. And I think we can make some better recommendations next year. And Kevin, please help me out on this.
Yeah, just to give a little of the history you know, on this. We made a change, to an amendment to the plan about a year and a half ago at the request of the board. And when we combined these units and we looked at them, we looked at what everything had gone. And this is a response. And I guess what I'm trying to say is if you look at it 1 year, you can't look at Cougar Harvest 1 year at a time. If we would have been the year before in the winter of 2010-2011 with the same female subquota, the same unit alignment with the Wasatch Manti combined, we would have shut that unit off prior to 8 females being killed, and it's somewhere in there. I may not have these numbers exactly right, and we would have killed something like 35 fewer cougars overall. So that's 1 year different from this year, where you didn't reach the quota this year. The year before, you went over it before we had a female subquota in place. The houndsmen in it, and granted, it's a different group of houndsmen. I was surprised when I walked in. I've been working with these guys for 8 years, and I didn't recognize any of them sitting here. Because the ones I was working with were begging for a female subquota, which we put in place last year after we combined these units. We've tried female subquotas on individual units in the past. It didn't work. We shut units down within 48 hours of them being open. We had overharvest. It was a cluster, both administratively and everything else. So the only way we were comfortable with doing a female subquota is on these larger units, where we only have 8 of them. We only have 8 female subquotas we have to track now instead of 50. It's administratively and everything else, we can't track 50 female subquotas. We tried it in the past, it didn't work. 8 female subquotas is doable. Now, when we put this in place, we were worried about this from the other end, that we would meet female subquotas and shut the whole unit down before we had any harvest on these sheep units, because that's what we had seen the year before. And that's why, again, it's just an example of why when we put the cougar management plan in place, we put it on a 3-year cycle. Because there's so much variation from year to year. We felt like over 3 years, we get good data, good information, and we can make adjustments that are meaningful going forward. I agree with John. If I was seeing that this is an emergency, you know, I'd be the first one to say, let's make an adjustment. I agree there's some tweaks that need to be made. Maybe we need to relook at how units are combined, but I don't see this as working on a decade of being involved with cougar management now. I don't see an emergency.
In the last 3 years, the Southwest Manti has been overharvested. The first year it went to a quota. The quota couldn't be shut down until Monday, actually Tuesday, because the cats couldn't be checked in until Monday because it was closed down for the weekend. It was overharvested by 6 cats.
Right.
And they changed it so that it started on a Wednesday, so it started on a Monday, so it would take care of that because they knew this premium unit would be harvested very quick. That took care of the problem. It was what it was supposed to be. Then this year, it was overharvested 18 cats.
And in the Southwest Manti, and Jason, we've had this conversation, it's a small enough area that
We don't look at cougar populations on that scale. You have to look at them on a much larger scale than just one part of one mountain range. We may over-harvest places from time to time at a small scale. I'm not worried about that. They'll fill back in.
So let's introduce the Henrys into the general season deer tag and see what happens.
Just Ernie, since this is an informational item and the board's not going to take any action, I think we have a good understanding of what the public's concerns are. I'm not sure I have as good an understanding of what the board would like us to do. And since you're not going to take a vote, it'd just be a comment sort of thing. And then we can go back and look at this and see whether we need to take further action. But I wanted to clarify what everybody's concerns are here, and I'm not too clear, other than John Bear, what the board's concerns are, or where you stand on this. So I think we need that information.
All right, that would be great.
Let me go back and ask John if I could. John, can you characterize the female harvest off of these units compared to the last 5 years?
In what way you mean?
Has that harvest jumped under this new management? I know it went up 2 years ago. That was due to heavy winter.
I guess I could pull the general table. Oh, you have it?
I may be able to help on the math, I don't know statewide.
That's what we need.
Are you looking for percent adult female in the harvest or percent female in the harvest?
Well, we finally narrowed down this discussion to one area. So I'd like to concentrate on the one area at this point. Previously, last August, the discussion was statewide and all limited entry hunting and a lot of other topics that have been discussed for 20 years. And now we're finally down to a core area of concern. So within that core area, can we talk about adult female and total female harvest?
So I'll give you a three-year average. On the Northeast Manti, the three-year average for percent female in the harvest is 57, Southeast Manti is 30, Northwest Manti is 16, and Southwest Manti is 16. So you have highs and lows within that unit. If you look at the percent of adult female in that harvest, Northeast Manti is 36, Southeast is 13, Northwest is 12, Southwest is 4. So
these are percent. These are not numbers. These are percentages.
This is a three-year average.
Year average, two of them was limited entry.
Actually, all three of them were limited entry.
Yeah.
That's not an average.
But if I understood you right, you asked for the five-year history, correct? I mean, is that what you asked for?
Well, the history, since we've instituted this plan, then.
2 years.
Okay.
2 years of data.
Strategy.
What's happened under this harvest strategy?
I can give you last year's. I don't think this year's is completed yet. I can give you last year's. Again, across the Manti for percent female in harvest, we were at 60, 18, 30, and 13.
And last year was not combined with the other units. We was our own separate unit.
Right, and this
wasn't the management area last year, right?
We're gonna have to share.
That's all. That's all we ask.
We weren't.
It was
a survey. So we've only had one year combined with the Wasatch.
Yes.
That's correct. So
okay. And what were those numbers?
I don't have those.
Have the years.
We have total female harvest, but not adult females.
We've got an estimate. Let's see what it looks like going back a few years again. A percent adult female. Going farther back, and again, like we've talked about how the things are grouped, but that Wasatch Manti, 0.12, 0.17, 0.24, then we had that big year in 10, 11, 0.37 percent adult female, then it looks like this year we're going to come in at about 0.24. So it's the standard bumping around, and again, it just led towards, it's exactly the same, this year's estimate, which is still not certain, but it's exactly what it was 2 years ago.
But keep in mind, there's only been 2 years of considering sub-adult female as a tall.
Yeah, we're not considering them toms.
Subadult females count against the female quota. Period. They're not considered toms. They're considered females, and if you kill a certain number of them, the unit shuts down.
Female's a female, no matter what her age.
For a quota, that's true.
But if we cannot kill the quota, do we suppose that the quota is set too high?
That's why we look at it over a long time period. Last year you would have been 40 over that quota.
We will not have cats in Sanpete if you guys take this another year. It'll be so minimal, it'll be pathetic.
You know, if I may speak for a moment, you know, we're all adults, and during the course of making a plan, we have to be able to look at a plan when we make it. And during that plan, you say, oh, you know what? It's not working. We need to make some adjustments to this. We can't keep it going the way it is, and just because we need to go to 3 years, keep letting that go. We need to be adult enough to say, you know what? It's a little out of line. We need to adjust it.
What you've just described is adaptive management, and we do that all the time with wildlife management. The question is whether it's needed right now on an emergency basis. We agree with you 100% that you need to be adaptable. And given the information we heard here today, and I think it's had a fair discussion, I'd still like to hear some other board members weigh in on it. We can go back and consider our options. But I would like a little more information from the board, what your feelings are as individual board members. You can't tell me collectively, because it's not an action item, but you can sure tell me individually.
Yeah. I have a question for you. How far, you say we're considering the numbers that are taken on the manti. How far south to the next sheep unit? How far north to the sheep unit? How far will cats travel? You know, say you wipe out completely all the animals, all the cats in the manti. Are you going to have, because there was no cats taken off Timpanogos, are part of those going to migrate down because there's too many in one area and they're going to migrate to the other? And vice versa, from the south, are they going to move up to fill in that hole?
That's the design of the plan in modern cougar management, the way most states are going to, is exactly what we're saying, that source sink kind of population. And we've done this analysis, and I can't really bring this up to everybody, but the point is we've got a map where Dave Stoner, Utah State, did this for us, where he's got all the cougar habitat mapped out. And you can see, I just have to describe it to you, but the red parts is where it's greater than 25% harvest, and then white areas where you have cougar habitat, but then you don't have that high harvest rate. And you can break it down within the manti, and you have sources, you have sinks, you have just what Kevin was going to say, where some individual places, some drainages are going to get hit really hard, and you'll lose cats from those areas, but there's pools of cats, you know, up and down that can backfill into these areas.
That will migrate and move, similar to the deer and the elk. As you over-harvest one, they're going to fill in. They're just going to naturally fill in.
So how far do they go then? Let's hear, John.
Well, that part.
One thing with his map and these units, the pools that he's talking about that he shows, they're at 9 and 10,000 feet. Those cats aren't at 9 and 10,000 feet during the wintertime. They're where the food source is. Mm-hmm. That's what he's showing on that map is pools. Those pools don't exist.
Those areas aren't counted as cougar habitat.
Only some cats at 10,000 feet in the dead of winter. Very, very few.
The other thing that we've got this really nice, the other thing that makes me feel sleep better as a biologist at night too, some of these reports for Bike Wolf, showing how quickly when you do come in, this is our comparison to the ochre from the ochre in Monroe, where during these, 96, 2000, Monroe hit really heavy. And what it does is, I can't really show this to everybody, but it shows the potential for these guys to rebound really, really quickly. So we've got some leeway to do our adaptive management, to do adjustments, and let these cougars come back in some of these areas if they are being hit. So between immigration and reproductive potential, I'm from a biological perspective, I'm not concerned about it.
Let me cut this off and see if we can move forward here. The crux of the discussion is that we have members of the public, the houndsmen, who believe that the manti, the southwest manti, cannot stand another year of harvest under this system. And the division biologists feel that we do not have a biological problem, and although the harvest may be higher than they would like to see in the future, it does not warrant an emergency change and changing, getting a three-year data set on what this produces. I think I've defined the crux of the disagreement fairly accurately there. So let me respond to Director Karpowitz's question by asking each of the board members to state where you're at on this. Del, could I start with you, please?
Yeah, I tend to agree that it seems to me that we may ought to seriously look at breaking out those northern sheep units and come up, but I also agree with what I'm hearing from the biologists that it's very difficult to, on 1 year's data, opposed to another year's data, make emergency closing. If there needs to be, I'm sure that that can be done with Director Karpowitz and the DWR, but at this point in time, I think we just need to take some more time to look and see what the data is, but with the idea that we eventually move towards separating those sheep units from the other manti.
Thank you. Mike?
I agree with Dale. I've only been on the board for just a little over a year now, and it seems like that in at least half of the meetings that I've been to, we've been urged to change things in the middle of a plan. And I just don't know how a plan can ever be effective or get the data that it needs to make some positive decisions for the future without letting it run the course. 3 years is not a long time, even when you start talking about population biology. You know, sometimes you need longer periods of time than that, I would suspect, to get a real accurate indication of what's going on. Having the ability to make adjustments on a three-year basis, I think, is pretty reasonable. But I think there are the issues that have been identified that are important, and we need to take a look at that. And if the separation of the sheep units compared to the others is something that probably ought to be looked at.
Very good. John?
Well, I think I made my point pretty clear before. I think we definitely need to get the sheep units separated, and I think the houndsman pretty much hit it on the head as far as, you know, getting that pressure off the manti. They should be up on the sheep units. So I've bellyached about this big unit plan that we've had before, and I'll probably do it again, but I think we definitely need to get the sheep units out of there and get that number of permits off the quota that ends up being pressure on the manti that shouldn't be there.
Thank you. Jake?
Yeah, looking at the numbers and everything, you know, I'm one that's all for trying to bring back our deer herds and everything, whether it's in that unit or on the Henry Mountains or the Ponsconna or the Monroe or wherever. And I think we need to stick with the plan the way it is until it comes up. I don't mind if Kevin and John work on that temp unit to make sure that we get the right amount of pressure on there, but I'm for staying with the plan.
Calvin?
I'd have to agree that, yeah, we need to look at it and see what needs to be done, but I agree that the three-year plan, let's let it run its course unless you see something that's really outlandish, or, you know, could you go in and make a tweak to the units midstream, or is that going to mess things up too much? You know, I don't know that, but I would look at that and, you know, maybe make a recommendation at our November meeting, and maybe then it's too late.
Yeah. The problem is to do it now. You've already got a guidebook that's published.
That's out there.
That shows the maps and the units all the way they are. So, it's a major undertaking to do it.
Even though you had an emergency one way or another, it'd still be pretty tough to do that.
Yeah, if we felt that it was that it really was an emergency, it would be worth doing. But
in an emergency, it's way easier to adjust permit numbers or quotas than it is to start changing boundaries.
I'm going to say, change boundaries, that ain't going to work.
Yeah, I mean, we run into that all the time with big game, and that's why all of the recommendations you've seen on big game are using existing boundaries, existing season dates.
To change the boundary is going to be tough to do midstream.
So on a short term, you can deal with permit numbers and quotas easier than you can
change areas, change the boundaries.
But let me just say one thing from a long-term perspective. I've been doing this now for 34 years, and I've seen this continuous cycle over the years of we're swimming in cougars, we're out of cougars, we're swimming in cougars, we're out of cougars. And what the plan tries to do is take those
fluctuations
out of it. Now, that doesn't mean there can't be adjustments. I mean, that's good management, is to be able to adapt. But at some point, we need to take those wild swings out of it. And I mean, there's still plenty of concern about the public about too many cougars and their effect on mule deer. And we are concerned about not only the mule deer, but the cougars, and making sure they're both healthy and viable. And so sometimes you have to stick with something long enough to see if it's working. All too often, we get our first statewide elk plan. 1 year into it, we changed it.
Yeah.
Here we are 1 year into a new cougar harvest strategy, and we're talking about changing it. And at some point, you have to have some discipline to stick with something long enough to see if it's really working. But within that context, if you've got something way out of whack and it's endangering some population or another, you ought to deal with it. And so that's what the division's going to have to do. We're going to have to decide whether this is truly an emergency, and then whether we want to bring it back to the board and the public for further discussion. And there's time. The point I was trying to make earlier, there is time to deal with this. It's not urgent today or even November 1st, because the harvest objective season doesn't start till March.
Okay, and that's where I was leaning to, is to stay where we were,
and regardless
for the time
of what
being.
Any numbers are in here, the director and or the board can change them. We've done it before. We've done it with cougars. I did it on an emergency basis
2 years ago.
So we don't want to come across as being inflexible and not listening to the people that are out there every day and concerned about this resource. On the other hand, there is something to be said for some stability. So,
okay.
I think we got a good feel, unless anybody else wants to weigh in on the board.
Well, yeah, Jim, the one thing I was going to say was I'm in favor of sticking with the plan as well, so that we get better data and better management decisions as outcomes. But I'm also sensitive to what the houndsmen have been talking about in terms of the pressure in this particular area. Maybe there's a way that the division could look at how permits could be issued in these different subsets to try to ease that pressure and try to push the pressure where it's more desired in those sheep units.
And then that's exactly what we'll do during the next recommendation cycle.
And I would say that I'm also in favor of staying the course. I'm convinced that the comments are accurate, that the harvest is higher than anybody wants right now as of this point, and that probably there is good merit in discussing changing the split of the units there. But I'm not sure that it warrants an emergency change at this point. So that would be my own personal opinion.
I had one other question. Jim, one of the gentlemen talked about outfitters from out of state coming down to hunt this area. And it kind of reminded me of the black bear and the LaSalle situation a couple of years back with Colorado outfitters coming over. Do we regulate those out-of-state outfitters and control them in any particular way?
Can't, because of commerce.
Remember we did something in the LaSalle's. I can't remember exactly what it was we ended up doing, but that alleviated that situation.
Yeah, I wish Marty was here to answer that.
I can answer that if you'd like.
We'll let Kevin answer.
Yep.
On the LaSalle and the San Juan, we dealt with that in, with pursuit only because it's not a, a commerce issue. Because we could treat non-residents and residents differently. With guides, it's completely a commerce issue. And, what Marty would tell you is it goes against the Commerce Clause in the Constitution in terms of regulating interstate commerce. We would like to have some more control there, but we don't feel like, especially with guides, we can go there.
One thing the board did do as an action about two or three years ago is we raised the non-resident or created a non-resident pursuit.
Correct.
I believe to $135. Now that may not.
But again, that's
keep some of the non-residents out. Well, on pursuit.
That's just pursuit.
But
on the harvest.
We've had requests for many, many years from the houndsmen and others to do that. I know that maybe is keeping them away, but we really can't do things to preclude them having a business.
One thing that Idaho did is made that a drawing for the pursuit permit.
Which is what we've done on the Manti and the LaSalle for bear pursuit. Exactly what we've done, and that's what's made us being able to we can limit non-residents for pursuit. Yeah, the LaSalle, the San Juan.
So there's another potential discussion item
as far as for a kill hunt
in the next 8 months.
Yeah, but it's not pursuit that they're worried about here. It's harvest.
Right. Yeah. So, look, I think we've got enough discussion here that, and it's been very healthy and very productive. I think we've got the board members' general feelings, both for the divisions and for the houndsman's information. One option out of this at the next board meeting, November 1st, might be for the board, a board member to suggest an action item that this topic be considered specifically in the revision of the plan that we'll consider next year.
And Ernie, you're making me nervous when we talk about revision of the plan. It's just the next recommendation cycle. We're not revising the plan.
Oh, that's correct. Thank you.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a 12-year plan.
It's a 12-year plan.
12-year plan. This is the next permit numbers revision.
Yes.
So, but however, that could be considered.
And we can amend the plan, too, but yeah. But the where we're headed right now is just the next recommendation cycle.
Okay.
So
with that... Director Karpowicz has already indicated I envision there may be a discussion inside the division here after this discussion, but I think that'll conclude this informational discussion. I thank all the public members for being here. And is there any board member that wants to make a state right now that they would like to see an action item go out in November? We're not going to take a vote on this, but
if we could also, if we're going to recommend a course of action, that could be in November. We'd have to hurry. When's the deadline for the RAC meetings in October?
For board information to go out?
Yeah, if this was added to the board, November, October.
To board only, right? Because the RAC's already started.
Okay, so we can't do that.
Last night.
Soon as we could do it, it's December.
If you're including a RAC
yes. November, RACs, December. Okay.
So
okay.
The division is considering.
Okay.
Okay. So with that, I thank the division for bringing this back to the board so quickly, and I thank the houndsman for being here and giving us your inputs. And with that, unless there's other comment, that'll close off this informational action log item, and we'll move on to other business. Is there any other business to be raised by anybody? We didn't hear it in the agenda. Entertain a motion to close.
Ernie?
So moved.
Hey, Ernie, this is Dell.
Yes, sir.
I see Ryan there. Did he have some information for us on another subject?
Ryan Fouts.
Ryan Fouts.
Shirley.
That's been taken care of. Thank you, though, Dale.
Whatever the mystery subject is, Dale, Ryan says it's fixed.
Okay, I'm happy with that. Thank you.
Whatever that might
nice
have been.
Nice to have a fixer in the room. Anything further?
No. Move to adjourn.
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded. Anybody that's opposed, raise your hand quickly. Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned.
That's good. That was all one sentence.